Welcome, everybody, to episode 297 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, December 13th, 2017. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by John James James John Jacoby.
Hello. Hi. Hello.
John Pentagon? Hey, that actually rhymes. Wow. John Penta? Something like that?
It's seven J's. How many J's is too many J's?
I don't know. Who knows? Unlimited amount of J's. Great to be back with you all. This week, last week, last week was the end of WordCamp US. Took a little vacation, went to the east side of Tennessee after WordCamp US. Found out that Nashville is not my city. I'm not a honky-tonk kind of guy, and Nashville just didn't do anything for me. But most metropolitan cities don't. So
you said that about Philly last year. And what city is your city, Jeff?
Well, look, I don't like big cities, but for some reason I like Chicago. But I don't think I could live in Chicago because I like having space. I need space from humans. So that's why I went to East Tennessee, because there's not very many humans in the mountains. You know, animals are great. Humans, yeah.
Wow.
Anyways.
Yeah, I think I have a feeling that the majority of our listeners are humans, Jeff. Oh, I feel like we might want to give them a little bit more compassion. And empathy and appreciation.
Okay, you're right. You're
right. For the hour that they spend with us every single week. And I had a lot of really positive feedback at WordCamp US about people that enjoy listening to us go back and forth. So they may not, now that you've pissed all of them off, I think, maybe.
Well, I'm uncomfortable now. So, you know, mission accomplished. We have a wonderful show for everybody today. Oh, by the way, just this is the kind of relationship John and I have. So I went to the doctor's appointment yesterday. It was my last doctor's appointment. Got to go ahead, and John responds to me on Twitter, "Hey, go break a leg." What kind of response is that, John? Explain yourself on this show right now to me. Now
that is a loving response for another for a fellow an entertainer who I know is going in for the big show.
Okay,
thank you. And everything turned out fine.
You did follow it up with a heart emoji, which makes everything better. Anyways, we got so much to talk about. We want to recap WordCamp US. We're going to get drunk on the Gutenberg Kool-Aid here in the show. But before we get to that, there is one particular news story I want to share with our audience, and that is Storyfy, which was a service used by journalists and a lot of other people to create timelines, similar to like Facebook and Twitter and other social networks, that launched in 2010. It's actually going to be closing its doors, at least for version one of the service, on May 16th, 2018. So Storyfy actually opened to the public in 2013. It was acquired by Livefyre in 2013. Did I get that right? No, it launched in 2010.
Yeah.
I think I might have got the years with that, but it was acquired by Livefyre, and then Adobe actually acquired Livefyre, so it became part of Adobe in 2016. So now it's closing down the service. New accounts have been disabled. They were actually delete the stories and accounts on the website on May 16, 2018. So if you use Storyfy or the plugin, the WordPress plugin has actually been discontinued. At last check, it was actively installed on 2,000 websites. So, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, that's not too many sites, but still. There's a FAQ that has been published, a frequently answered questions section that includes directions on how to export your content from Storyfy. However, there have been some users who have commented on the fact that the export process is cumbersome. So I kind of wrote this post on WP Tavern. I've put a shout out there, and I'll extend this to our listeners because I know we have a lot of smart people in our audience. Yes, I'm getting them back brownie points.
Yes, you are.
But if you know of a service or a method or create a plugin or know of a plugin that makes the export process easier from Storyfy into WordPress, please get in contact with me at jeffc@wptavern.com so I can share it with our audience to make the process easier. Well, and there you go, John.
This is going to be one of those things that we refer back to later on in our talk that we're about to have. The importance of being a good citizen when it comes to data formats, because they're not alone. Twitter has a weird export. I think it exports like just HTML, right? Like Facebook, if you export your Facebook data, they just give you an HTML dump, and it's like there really is no obligation to be a good citizen when you're giving someone all their data back. There is sort of the expectation that your APIs will be out in public forever and that you'll have things accessible out to the world. But, you know, there's a responsibility, I think, when you export your data out of a place that it should be in a relatively easy to digest and reshape and reuse sort of format.
Wasn't there like a whole collective or something that was sort of working on this, you know, make some kind of standard?
Heck, we had
export and import your data.
We have WXR for blog related things, but now that we finally feel like we finished all of the important work there, we abandon it and go for a REST API and everything else. So, you know, we just wheels in the sky, keep on turning.
Okay, so just a heads up there, if you use Storify, please, you know, download, export your content. I know it's a cumbersome process, but you have some time now to go in there and get your content before it disappears into the ether. So there you are. And I know some people who have like more than 100 stories on Storify. So that's quite a bit of content.
That was Ning back in the day too, when all their APIs and things changed. Getting data out of Ning, there was 10 different versions of a Ning importer for BuddyPress because their data formats and APIs and export formats changed or were incomplete, or you had to use a V2 for one and a V3 for another. We can do better, I think.
Exactly. So that let's bring on our guest, an awesome, handsome fella. Love this guy. His name is Martin Rand Hendrickson. He's been on the show before. He's a senior staff author at lynda.com, at LinkedIn, and the director of Pink and Yellow Media, Inc., a digital media company based in Burnaby, British Columbia. And you may remember him from such episodes as Telemetry on, you know, Telemetry and WordPress. He's been advocate the right word? Of Gutenberg. He's really been in the mix, I'll say, of Gutenberg. So we're going to get
champion?
Champion.
Gutenberg champion.
That's right. He had a great presentation that we'll get into about Gutenberg and the future of WordPress or the WordPress of tomorrow. Excellent presentation. So we're going to get into all kinds of cool stuff here. But Morten, I know you're on the West Coast. In California, somewhere near where the fires are. I just wanted to get an update from you on, is everything cool? Everything safe? Where'd he go?
I'm just pulling a Matt Mullenweg. I'm like slowing down. You can make everything break here.
That's awesome. That's very funny.
Thank you for that introduction that I heard half of. I'm assuming all the things you said were accurate.
I was just saying, you're on the West Coast. I know that you're pretty near where the fires are in Southern California. I just wanted to know, is everything safe with you, your coworkers, and give us an update on your safety there?
Yeah, I'm safe because I'm in Vancouver, which is very far away from the fires. I have a lot of colleagues who live and work in and around the area of the Thomas Fire. They're doing okay. There's, you know, we've had a lot of big wildfires up here too in the past couple of years, and it's pretty intense, and I can only imagine what they're going through down there. So, but you know,
scary stuff.
Things move forward. Yeah. It's things are changing with the climate, it appears.
Who'd have thought?
A lot of things are burning and a lot of things are melting. Waters are rising.
It's crazy.
But it's okay.
We'll just have to
be
responsible.
We got a ship of Theseus we can ride out on if the case of water gets too high. All attended WordCamp US this year. It was held in Nashville, Tennessee, the first of two, which will be held in Nashville, Tennessee, in the convention center. They were expecting close to 2,000 people, if not more, to show up at this event. I figured we'd go around the table, kind of share our experiences at the event, and I'll start with you, John.
So I'm happy you started with me because there's a spoiler tag on mine. I had a talk afterwards with Andy Nason. I talked with a couple others, but Andy was kind of the first person to hear what I'm about to say, which is that during Matt's State of the Word, where Matthias did his live demo of Gutenberg in front of everybody, that was like the turning point, I think, for the community or for the naysayers. And it had that live demo not happened, I think we would be having a completely different type of conversation than what we're having right now. One, I think having Matthias do it, because I've worked with Matthias at Automattic, I know who he is, but the people who don't know him needed to see him. And the live demo was like a super home run. Like, it was an amazing display of what Gutenberg is capable of actually doing inside of WordPress. And it didn't break anything. Like, it looked really, really impressive and amazing. So if that live demo hadn't have happened, then I think we would be having different or the same exact type of Gutenberg conversations that we have been having for the past 8 months. That live demo being a home run changed the entire trajectory of the type of Gutenberg conversations that I think that we're having from now until Gutenberg gets grafted into WordPress core. So that, I think, for me, like, philosophically for WordPress and Gutenberg as a project hack, for Matthias, the person who had to do the live demo, that was like an amazing, super pivotal point for all of it.
You know,
that was my favorite part.
And the interesting thing is, just about everything you said, I told Morten in the pre-show before you arrived. I felt like I could feel it in the audience, the oohs, the ahs, and the accessibility parts, people were clapping. And mm-hmm. I felt like that demo and having it presented by someone who really knows the ins and outs of Gutenberg, mm-hmm. and nothing broke, and you could see what Gutenberg is capable of now.
Yep.
I think it opened up a lot of eyes, like you said, to the naysayers that, you know, Gutenberg could do a lot of cool things as it is now, you know, today inside of WordPress. And I think a lot of people that had their reservations or just based on screenshots or conversations yep. they've read and they've stayed away from Gutenberg, actually getting to see it used like that with the columns and the theme colors, I think, and I've seen it on Twitter, it's inspired so many people to actually mm-hmm. go out and try Gutenberg for themselves, which
It was gutsy and it totally worked. And I thought that my favorite part of it for me is watching Matthias go through Gutenberg, like, not just like methodically, but in like a very WordPress kind of way. Like, you can add a new post in three different places in WordPress. You can go up to the admin bar and add new post. You can go on the left-hand menu bar in WP Admin and go post add new. Once you're viewing your list of posts, there's an add new link up in the header. And so there's always multiple avenues that are convenient to get to the thing that you want to do. And so watching Matthias go through and add a block inline, that's pretty cool. Oh, there's also a menu up on the upper left-hand corner where you can click plus and add a block and the thing drops down. Oh, that's cool. I see why that's convenient. And then watching him do the slash commands and add blocks that way, everyone's like, oh, that's awesome, right? Like, going through in like a very WordPress way of saying like, look, like, we've considered all of the convenient ways that someone may want to introduce a new block, and here are all the ways that you can do it and get to it, was really clever because it felt very deep. It felt very finished, even though it's not. And that, I think, really, if it wasn't for that, we'd be having a different conversation entirely, I think.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the day before with Morten's presentation. He also did a live demo. So maybe mm-hmm. his live demo was the catalyst for the awesome demo during the State of the Word. I don't know. But he had an awesome demo and showed off, you know, the capabilities and what's possible in Gutenberg. And his demo actually went off flawlessly as well. Yeah. So maybe he kind of set the stage. But Morten, sort of walk us through that and your decision to sort of do a live demo of Gutenberg in front of the audience. I mean, were you scared? Were you afraid something's going to break?
No, I wasn't scared. But it's because I'm like, people are always really worried about doing live demos on stage. And I think it's because they want everything to be perfect. But I like to show all the where the edges are and what happens when things just fall apart. So I've gotten used to this idea of doing a live demo and then everything exploding and then be like, okay, we're going to figure out why that happened right now. That's odd, right? The reason why I chose to do a live demo originally I was going to make a series of slides that had videos inside them to showcase different features. But the project evolved so quickly that I would record a video and then a day later, would have moved, and I wanted it to be as accurate to the current version as possible. I also wanted to just show people, the actual interaction of it to see. Mm. Oh, so I'm clicking around here, and this is this thing, and then I can mess around with it, and do weird things that you wouldn't do in a video. But most importantly, it was simply that I think probably the same reason why Matthias did the live demo, that when I watched the conversations about Gutenberg, they generally are of the, they were in the past, or before this event, they were generally of the type, I've seen pictures and I don't like it, or don't touch my interface, I don't want it to change, or this is not ready because I tried it in April and it was insane, right? And a lot of people were of that, you know, in that position where they had tried it early on and found it to be lacking. And then they've kind of assumed that whatever feature they didn't like has been amplified and continued rather than fixed and improved, right?
And I was one of those people.
Yeah, I think everyone was in that boat. I mean, I was in that boat when I started messing around with it, because I was testing it early on in the year, and then I was like, this isn't working properly. And then I waited a couple of months, and then I came back in, and I'm like, well, I see they've fixed that problem, but now there's all these other things happening. So I've been in and out of it. And I finally decided in September that I needed to really sit down and pay attention to exactly what's going on, and also look at how the updates are made. So when... there is an issue. How long does it take before someone flags it? Is that issue then addressed in the GitHub repo? Who responds to it? How is the... So I've been kind of, what do you call it? Lurking on the process to see how the process is evolving, right? And what I saw was a lot of the issues that are surfaced when one of the versions are shipped are almost immediately addressed. And then a new solution is put out, and then it gets tested, and then they may revert back or change it a number of times before it ends up being the final product or the final thing they want to release. So having a live demo component is important simply to show people this thing works and you can work with it and it won't destroy everything. Because you know, the core of WordPress, and the reason why I think WordPress is so popular, is once you install it and run it, there's very little you can do to actually ruin things. You can mess it up, but it's not permanent and it doesn't damage, you know, you can't do anything inside a post that damages your site. It only damages the post you're working on, and you can probably roll back a revision. With early versions of Gutenberg, people had experiences like they would write an entire blog post and then something would happen so they couldn't save it, and then the blog post would disappear. It wouldn't be saved anywhere. Right, which is an incredibly frustrating experience and very un-WordPress-like. Or they would write something and then add some sort of block and then save it, and what they saw on the front end was nothing like what they'd saved, or the thing they added simply didn't show on the front page at all. And you know, those types of experiences make people feel like they're no longer in safe territory. So showing them, look, it's not final, but you can actually muck around with it now and get something workable out of it on the front end, gives people that license to start playing around with it. And that's what was missing, that people need to know, like, you are okay to do this now. It is not going to break everything.
Your presentation was called WordPress or Gutenberg, the WordPress of tomorrow. And there are so many things I really enjoyed about your presentation. For up to this point, I've read the numerous lengthy blog posts about, you know, we called it Gutenberg for a reason by Matt Mulloway, The Ship of Theseus by Matthias. And I've read the philosophies and sort of what the end goal and the vision is. But your presentation pieced it all together for me by talking about how we've been designing in these small rectangular boxes, these viewports, for so long, and how WordPress themes have header and a footer and a sidebar, and we're just messing around with the content portion of Gutenberg now. But Gutenberg of the future, you know, the content editor is just step one, and eventually it's going to take over pretty much everything. You know, the customizer is next. We know that much. So you'll be able to do all these different things with blocks and put them anywhere you want. And you even mentioned a little bit the VR, you know, VR of the future. You know, within the next 5 years, we'll have these VR experiences, which, by the way, I saw a video on Twitter yesterday that where somebody was looking through VR and there are all these different blocks, like Twitter blocks everywhere. And I'm like, whoa, you know, that could be something like, you know, you're looking at a Gutenberg-powered website where all those things are blocks. But, you know, your presentation is not a one-hour demo of Gutenberg. To me, I thought it was – there's a demo of Gutenberg that's part of your presentation, but most of your presentation was the why behind Gutenberg. And I liked how you hammered the point that Gutenberg was never just an editor replacement. Talk a little bit about that.
I think, like many projects it's often hard for the people who are working on the project to remember that the people that are watching from the outside don't have the legacy and the history of the project when they're coming to it. So when Gutenberg was first presented as a functioning plugin, you installed it into your site and it would take over the editor. So the assumption then is, oh, this is an editor replacement. And then the entire conversation is centered around editor replacements. You'll notice that if you go in and look at any conversation about Gutenberg prior to WordCamp US 2017, you'll see there's this constant thing about, well, if you don't like it, you can just revert to the old editor. And a lot of the solutions that are proposed by the Gutenberg team are also, if you don't like it, you can revert to the editor, to the point that Matt was talking about how there is a classic editor plugin you can install that can revert back to. That, like I said in the talk, that was never the intent of this project. It was just never communicated properly that was never the intent, right? Mm-hmm. And I felt like when I was given this opportunity to speak at the conference, they literally came to a person who has been vocally critical of the project, who is not part of the project, and said, hey, can you present this to people? Which is a gutsy move. And I'm quite honored to have been given that privilege of doing it. But it also shows that the people in the team truly believe that this thing can stand on its own. It doesn't have to have like a person from the team going like, these are the reasons why it's great. That someone else coming from the outside and looking at it would actually see the value. So I took it on as my role being, I went through a transformative experience of trying to figure out what this thing was and really dive into it and look at it, not just from what it is now, but what it's going to be. And it took me a long time to understand all this stuff. And I wrote a blog post about it in the end of the summer. And I wanted to see if I could condense that down to half an hour and get other, like help people through that process of understanding where this thing is going, so that they can then take on and look not just at the current editor, but also think about how can I use this if it breaks out of the editor? How can I build blocks? How can I build views? How can I do all these things? So for instance, today, Beaver Builder posted an article about how they think, I haven't even read it because I just saw it pop up, but I'm assuming that they are writing an article about how they're thinking about their new page builder role in the Gutenberg universe. And this is something I brought up at the question and answer period, that the concept of blocks changes the way WordPress works in a fundamental way, which means a lot of these current ways of doing things will have to change to accommodate this new concept of blocks. Mm-hmm. And most plugins will have to change their approach. A lot of these businesses that exist in the WordPress ecosystem may have to pivot to fit with the blocks and find new roles for themselves, but that doesn't mean the roles go away. So for instance, people often see if blocks take over the whole view and you have the ability to move them around, then you're basically eliminating the need for a page builder. I don't think so. I think the page builder steps in a new role as the template builder for blocks, so that you have a visual template builder and you don't have to do it by through code. And there could be other things page builders can do that WordPress itself won't do. It's just everyone has to think about this from a new perspective and really like say, start fresh. How do we fit into this new environment? What can we do with it? And how can we help it grow to be something bigger?
Yeah, Gutenberg is not going to kill all page builders. It's just that's not the way it works. In fact, you even brought this up, I believe, in your answer to a question about it being a page builder killer. We have precedence for this with the customizer. Yeah. The customizer first came out. A lot of revolt, a lot of friction with themes and commercial theme authors out there that why is this customizer here? I've already got one that's bundled with my theme, and each theme kind of did it in their own way. But over time, and we've actually read articles on this saying, hey, I've got all these theme options. What am I doing bundling all this extra functionality when I could just slide them into these customizer controls? And now it's built into core, and it's a lot less to maintain, and now you're doing things the WordPress way. And I think it's going to be maybe difficult for some, but there's going to be that transition period where over time, plugins, themes, you know, eventually we'll get to a point where the majority are adopting and really taking full advantage of Gutenberg.
Yeah, and that's the big question mark to this whole project, right?
The transition part?
Yeah, so unlike the customizer, which was a thing that kind of the way it was introduced, it first started by saying, here's another way you can customize things. And then over time, we started to say, like, if you ship a theme in the WordPress directory, you can't have a page settings page. You have to move all those things over into the customizer. So the next time you update your theme, you need to do that. Like, there was a very slow transition period into this stuff. And that was okay, because the customizer basically added a new interface layer to existing functionality within WordPress. So essentially a new place to put features, a new place to control existing features. What Gutenberg does is introduce an entirely different way of handling data inside WordPress. So we can't incrementally roll out a change and say, we can wait like 5 years until you get your ass in order and like organize this stuff and get into this. This is a hard break where you have to like switch. Earlier this week, I wrote an article about the three conditions I think need to be met for Gutenberg to be successful. And one of those conditions is the community needs time from Gutenberg is ready until WordPress 5.0 ships to basically rewrite their code. Mm-hmm. Because once Gutenberg rolls out, the end user of various plugins and everything will expect to run a regular WordPress update and then everything to work the same. It won't work the same. So that means any additional hangup or complication that gets introduced will be experienced by the end user as something going wrong in WordPress, right? So if you can imagine, if you have a site that uses the Yoast SEO plugin, and the Yoast SEO plugin in its current iteration, when it's displayed inside Gutenberg, looks quite insane, right? It works, but it looks strange. And so do all other plugins. This has nothing to do with Yoast. It's just a plugin everyone uses, right? So Yoast's team is going to, in advance of Gutenberg's release, rewrite their plugin so that if you are running an old version of WordPress, you get the current experience. If you're running the Gutenberg version of WordPress, you'll get this new Gutenbergified experience where everything is hooked in properly. So when that switch happens, Yoast will magically update to look and function properly. But that requires that the Yoast team has time from the merge proposal to the release enough to not only update and test and run this and put it against their enterprise clients and everything, but also force an update on every single site in the world that uses their plugin that happens on the back end. So once 5.0 rolls around, the magic happens inside the update, right? And that has to happen for every single major plugin, not just Yoast. And a lot of the plugins that have features that will be impacted have only started thinking about what they're going to do as of 2 weeks ago, right?
And based on the timelines that we know of, sometime in 2018 is going to be quite possibly the release of WordPress 5.0, which also will have Gutenberg. And I would say, over the past couple of months, and especially lately, one of the concerns expressed most often by so many people is this timeline. Like, whoa, hey, let's slow it down a bit. Give us some time, you know? And Bridget Willard actually created this awesome post and an issue on GitHub talking about how she was concerned that because of the timeline, the economic impacts of something like Gutenberg will have on so many developers and agencies that, hey, you know, we got to have time to be able to see if we can be able to update these sites that we've already done work on. And you know, all these developers and agency types are saying, hey, you know, I've completed all these projects and websites on WordPress 4.9. And now what am I supposed to do? Send them a bill saying, hey, make your site Gutenberg ready to make sure it works. Hey, fork over some more money. And, you know, a lot of people are not going to like that.
It's tricky. Kevin Hoffman has been bringing this up for a while about the meta boxes, the custom meta boxes. Bridget is bringing up the business end of that same conversation. And this is a major concern because there is an expectation in the WordPress community that an update will not mess up anything. But Gutenberg, even if it's dressed up and, you know, backwards compatibilified till the end of time, it still will cause things to not work the way people expect because it's changing the way we operate, right? So you can imagine if you're running your own personal blog, the learning curve is there, but it's fairly small. If you are running an enterprise site that has 20,000 users, and you have a specific edit flow that the users go through to publish content, like if you're a newspaper or a university or anything like that, you need to then get every single user to learn this new process. And the process is not something that they choose when goes live. It gets forced on them, right? So there's this, the cost to the end user of this update is significant. And that doesn't even include any redevelopment or re-engineering or updated plugins and themes and all that stuff. That comes in addition to just the training costs. So, well, yeah, go
ahead. Your point about it, about the customizer, is that it is all or nothing. And that I think is what makes this a point of contention for people,
yeah,
is that Gutenberg is kind of an on-off switch. Mm-hmm. And that is not typically the way that the WordPress is developed.
Yeah.
And so we don't have a lot of history or experience that leans on this going very well. And we're all kind of pointing at the warning signs saying like, well, this is going to, here are all of the things that we can see that are going to be happening, that are going to be negative, that are going to be hard or expensive or challenging, or it is kind of a full stop that even for small teams that build plugins or themes or what have you, whatever their roadmap was pre-Gutenberg is kind of on pause while they kind of scramble to make sure that the next version of what they want to push out is Gutenberg ready. And that's good. It's fine. These things have to change. That's fine. But it's the first time in a long time that this drastic of a thing is happening. So it makes sense why it's high anxiety for a little while.
And so, that is because of how we've been doing things. I mean, we the WordPress community, the people who build WordPress, the contributors, all that stuff, we've established this expectation that WordPress, first of all, is backwards compatible until like 0.0.1 or whatever, which is an insane requirement that should never be on any application ever. But we also provided this expectation that when things change, they're always incremental. They don't really do much, and you'll have ample time to update, right? But that is not actually a functional way forward. That has been a giant grand piano hanging behind the WordPress truck that has been breaking development and preventing us from doing a bunch of interesting things. And Gutenberg will be a breaking change no matter what we do, because it changes the way that data is handled inside WordPress. Right now, it's just changing it by adding a bunch of HTML crap into the post table, but that's just step one. Next, it'll do other things, and it's introducing things like the repeatable blocks, custom post type, and that attaches to it a bunch of unanswered questions about what on earth is that thing and how is that going to be managed. So it's already changing a bunch of stuff, and that means this would be the opportune time to actually say, you know what, we are going to ship a breaking change in WordPress, and we are going to give people a natural path off that breaking change so that they have time to get ready and prepare their setups and everything, which is why I'm proposing basically to fork WordPress, which is something that you are not allowed to say in the WordPress community. I posted an article about this 4 or 5 years ago, and people were furious at me for doing that. And I'm like, and I literally in that article said, at some point, we're going to want to do something with the data structures of WordPress that will require us to fork it, because people are going to need to be able to hold back. And then everyone's like, boo, you're an idiot. You can't do that. You're using the term fork the wrong way. Like, and I'm like, no, this is going to happen. And now it is happening. Mm-hmm.
John knows a thing or two about forking.
Yeah, but it's like, this is something that needs to happen for this to be sustainable, because let's say we ship this right now, and let's say all the major issues that we're addressing are resolved in some functional way, right? So custom meta boxes work in some functional way. All these other things work in some functional way. Even if that happens, there are still instances where people have plugins or themes that require some functionality in the classic editor that we are removing. So those themes will be able to go in and say, I don't support Gutenberg. And that forces a rollback. So that forces the site to roll back to classic editor. And that means even if I ship my plugin to support Gutenberg, if some other plugin declares lack of support for Gutenberg, I also then have to ship my plugin with classic editor support, which means I can't do the cool things I want to do with Gutenberg. I can't move WordPress forward. And that applies to all of WordPress, not just Gutenberg.
I think that's the question I think Kevin Hoffman brought up to Matt, that
yes.
we're sort of in this limbo where a plugin, like you just said, declaring this affects other plugins. And ooh, that doesn't sound good.
And the answer Matt gave, which was, over time it will fix itself. No, that's not an actual functioning solution to that, because this approach actually allows someone to deliberately delay the process of evolving WordPress, because they can ship a popular plugin and just force reverting, right? And then say like, I don't actually want you to expand Gutenberg into the customizer, so I'll just declare lack of Gutenberg support on everything I do, right? And that way, there are all these people who use
that won't happen.
Digital protest.
That won't happen that way. Yeah,
It will happen.
I don't know.
See, it will happen. It won't happen on a grand scale, but it'll happen on a big enough scale that will get a sharding of the community, where you'll have people that deliberately force Gutenberg out. And the people that will do this are the people that build larger websites, who've already built these very complex setups and don't want to update the whole thing, either because they don't want to do the work, or more likely because their clients can't pay for that work, right?
When we decided to make BB Press a plugin in 2009 and 10, it was a big deal for the people who it was a big deal for. And I still don't love all of the way that things like that work, but some people were pretty brokenhearted about like losing the thing that they really loved a lot or put a lot of time into or invested a lot of time into. There were deep-rooted 5-year contributors to BB Press that worked on the 0. nothing branch to 1.1 and on, and were convinced that having it be what it was the best thing for BB Press. And honestly, there are days where I'm not always sure that there is a right or a wrong to that answer, but making it a plugin and rebuilding it as a plugin that used post types and taxonomies and all these things was a new generation. It brought a lot of life back to BB Press that it had originally, but it instantly alienated all of the original contributors to the project. And so it to the point of like, they stopped contributing. I mean, some of the prolific BB Press contributors left, and that is sad. But unfortunately, I think having it be a plugin was the best thing for it as a piece of software. Mm-hmm. So over time, the people that stop Gutenberg progress by removing post type support or by just putting the peg in and just stopping it, hopefully, I think the community will course correct and police and say, hey, come on now, or someone will fork a library and remove the block, or if it ends up being that dramatic, I'll be pretty surprised. I think you're right that it is possible to do. I think the effects of it that will probably be really small, and that we'll look back on it and it will be a blip, and it won't be a good blip, but it'll be a blip, and hopefully, you know, for the better.
I actually agree with you on that. My concern is not that people are going to do this. My concern is that we are building, like, the current way that this is being built is an assumption that the problem can be engineered away by doing this very slow incremental release of a change of how WordPress works. But at the same time, that change is already happening on day one. It's just there's just all this stuff pretending like the change isn't happening all at once, right? Mm-hmm. So, and by doing that, you're basically trying to push a problem forward to the point where the problem gets pushed so far that you can't do the things you want to do because the problem gets in the way, right? So if we don't do a hard, like do some form of breaking change at this point, the breaking change will just be pushed to the next version. And then it'll keep getting pushed until we get to a point where it's like, we can't actually do this because there are too many people that rely on these hokey solutions to get, you know, to hide the problems. And by this time, we've already gotten people invested in the current version. So what I expect might happen is Gutenberg will be built for the ASIC editor replacement. And then you may get some functionality in the customizer, but it'll be limited and we'll never get beyond that point because the community will push so hard against any new change that comes after those first rollouts, because they'll be like, well, now I trained all my people on this new Gutenberg thing and now you're going to change it again and make it even more complicated. And then every single turn, we'll have the same conversation, which is, you're breaking my plugins. You're breaking all these things. And I think that's because the project never stipulated what is the end goal here. What is this going to look like at the end of the whole thing? Where are the blocks going to go? What are the blocks going to be? There are a lot of blocks that are being built, but there's no clear cohesive presentation of like, what if the entire thing is just an area where you can place blocks wherever you want? How is that actually going to work? Like, how am I going to place a logo block in the top corner and then the site title over here and everything? How do I actually do this? And how is that structured? Until they figure that out, they really can't ship version one because I won't be able to build a plugin that prepares for that. So instead, I'll have to build a plugin that works for right now. And then the next time there is an update, I'll go, I just invested tons of money in preparing this first edition of it. Why should I continue doing this every time you come up with a new crazy idea?
Well, that was the original BuddyPress problem, was like when BuddyPress 1.0 came out, it worked a very different way than it did when BuddyPress 1.1 came out. Mm-hmm. And after Lisa wrote the BuddyPress for Dummies book, and we completely re-architected the way that everything worked, it's hard to rewrite that book again. And then when single site and multi-site got merged and the BuddyPress code base changed again to support single site, it was like, well, we've made a lot of changes. Some stuff broke. We had a compatibility layer. We did all that before. And at least for us, even though I think we did a really good job, it didn't really go very well. Like, it didn't make people happy. It wasn't like people were excited to move to the next version because they knew that they were giving up all of the education that they earned the release before and the release before that. Mm-hmm. So I think you're right about...
How do you answer this question? So I train people on how to build sites with WordPress, how to build WordPress themes and so on, right? And the number one question I'm getting right now is, should I stop learning this right now and just wait until Gutenberg ships? Is there going to be such a fundamental change that if I learn how to build a theme today, that information will be useless? And my answer right now is, the structural components of a theme right now will be fine for version one of Gutenberg. But once Gutenberg goes outside the editor, all bets are off because we don't know what that's going to look like, right? So right now you can say that everything Gutenberg does exists inside the content. So you dump out the content, you get the output of Gutenberg. Once Gutenberg moves into the customizer, I have no idea what that is. I don't think anyone does. Or if they do, they haven't documented it in a way that I can understand or even access. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for me personally, I develop courses. I need to now have a plan in place to develop a new version of all these courses basically on a yearly basis that completely changes the process. And all the people that are learning this stuff will then have to be aware that, like, you'll learn something today. More than likely 6 months from now, a new version of WordPress will come out with some update to Gutenberg that then changes all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then it might change it to the point where everything you just learned is pointless.
It's especially you must have a good perspective on, like, in general, I think we all kind of have a baseline understanding that, like, users, including myself, are grumpy. And so when something changes, the rage is pretty instant. Like, where did this go? And now it's broken and I'm instantly frustrated and it's somebody else's fault and I'm over it and done.
AKA but then, Firefox, Quantum.
AKA everything.
All right. And so then, but then on the flip side of that, there's also a lot of evidence to support, like, how blasé that users are or adaptable that they can accidentally be when Apple is notorious for changing huge amounts of things or flattening the entire UI. And people hate it at first, but then time shows that they were probably right. Yeah. Or like self-driving cars. Are we all afraid of it? Sure, for a little while. But you know what? Time will tell that it was probably the right thing. And so while we're in the middle of this transitional period, it all feels, I think, a lot more heightened, and our like lizard brain awareness is like, that's not good, that's not good, that's not good, that's dangerous, danger, 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 danger. And then the reality should hopefully be, as long as we all do a good job, that that moment passes, the danger goes away, and we hopefully have like very little to nothing to worry about. So, like, I think it's really important and good that we are identifying all these sharp edges that we are snagging ourselves on and filing issues and literally filing bugs and sharp edges off of all this stuff, because it is all for users to try and make this as minimally jarring as possible. But yeah. The fact that it's an on-off switch and the fact that the posting experience does sort of feel like an editor replacement, because it literally does replace the entire posting and editing experience, Do you think that this would be different, or we'd be having a different conversation if all that happened was the regular tiny MCE HTML tab block was just blockerized or Gutenbergized, and the rest of it was exactly the same? Would we be having a different conversation?
Yes, but we would have a different conversation, because that wouldn't be the thing that's being built at all. That would be an actual editor replacement, right? I think to address your point about people panicking and then the complacency eventually kicking in, I mean, you see that every time a major social media site makes a change. Remember, like every time Facebook rolls out a change, everyone's like, Facebook changed. I'm deleting my account right now. Right. And then 10 minutes later, they're like, ooh, I like this new button over here. It's really neat. Right?
Twitter from stars to hearts. Oh my God.
Yeah. I have opinions about that one, because that actually changed the semantic meaning of a star to a like thing. But when Twitter changed their corner radius on the box, and people were freaking out about the box was too round, and people have a lot of opinions about corner radii for a short period of time, and then they go, oh, there are more important things happening in the world, so I'm going to just ignore this. The thing with all those, though, is they all change the way the interface looks and maybe behaves. They don't change the way the entire application works. I think a better analogy is when Apple moved from PowerPC to Intel, right? Where they were like, oh, you're going to upgrade your system. Also, you need to buy all new software. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
And it's funny, because when Apple did that, and a lot of, I'm not a huge proponent of the fruit company. When Apple did that, people were angry, but okay with it, because the people who use Apple products are used to paying a lot of money. Right. Mm-hmm. And I kept saying, imagine if Microsoft did this. Apple would run advertising campaigns against Microsoft, specifically making this a point. Like, look how Microsoft changed their processor. Now you have to buy all new software. Come to our platform instead. But then when Apple does it, everyone's like, all hail the grand Apple. I will never do anything. I will do exactly what you say. But my friend had a PowerPC setup, and something went wrong with the computer. Just, I forget. There was some sort of the motherboard conked out or whatever. And he was in the middle of editing a movie. So he went to Apple and he said, hey, can I have a new motherboard? And they said, no, you have to update to the Intel processor, right? Because there is no reverting back.
Yep.
And he was like, okay, so I have to do that. So that costs $1,200. He did that. And then he goes back in and he's like, oh, I can't run any of my software. So now I have to go buy $3,000 worth of software that I already own to finish editing my movie, right? That's the experience we're doing right now.
Right.
Because the clients of WordPress who have a site that they spend $10,000, $20,000 to build that's highly customized, they are not in their budgets for 2018 preparing for re-engineering their website. Maybe some of them are, but the majority are not. The WordPress community is not going out to all its legacy clients and saying, hey, by the way, you know that custom thing I built for you? You need to set aside a ton of money to re-engineer that to make it work properly. So those are my friend with a movie half edited, who now, after WordPress 5.0 rolls out, will need to make a full update. Right. Unless we as the community do a very concerted effort to, first of all, inform everyone about what's going on and how this is going to impact them. Second of all, actually do an outreach program to everyone to say, look, this is how you test this in your enterprise solution, even if you're not a developer, to see how this impacts your site. This is how you talk to your old vendor or your new vendor or whatever about making updates. And most importantly, this is how you stop this from happening until you can collect yourself enough to get an update ready. Because what I imagine will happen is, for instance, some of my old clients that I don't longer deal with because I'm not doing custom development anymore, they're in a position where they likely will not know about this until we start rolling it out. At that point, they have to then set aside a ton of money to get all this redeveloped, which they don't have right now. They might have it next year, next year, 2019, right? So they need a way of basically gracefully bowing out of Gutenberg until they are ready to switch it.
Isn't that the whole purpose of the Classic Editor plugin?
No, it's not.
That, boom, now you just wait.
It's not, because the Classic Editor plugin doesn't solve the inherent problem of getting people to the new solution. So a Classic Editor problem, what it does is it gives you the ability to basically turn Gutenberg off by continuing to update WordPress, right? Which means the next edition of Gutenberg can't really be released, because the Classic Editor plugin doesn't solve the problem of putting Gutenberg blocks in in the customizer, right? So what will happen is you install Classic Editor, you then move on, then WordPress 5.1 ships, and 5.1 has a bunch of stuff in the customizer, and then just the Classic Editor plugin then prevent blocks from happening in the content editor, but not in the customizer?
The reality is that the Classic Editor plugin just falls out of maintenance, and then people forget that it even exists. Like that's what's going to happen. Is like
all the sites that rely on current functionality will use it, and if they just keep updating, they'll run into a position where all of a sudden this breaking change happens, but it happens at a later date, and they'll be like, "Why on earth am I having to do this now?" So from a PR standpoint, the correct place to make this happen is at the shift to 5.0 to say, you can here choose to stop at 4.9.x and then just get security updates, or you can continue into new WordPress and then get all these new features. And then ideally what you do is you stop at 4.9.x until you have enough resources, money, or just figure out what you're going to do, then make all the updates necessary, and then move into the new branch and get all the latest updates. That would be the responsible way of doing this, because it would allow people to gracefully bow out until they're ready, and it would allow WordPress to actually evolve forward to adopt the new database regime that JJJ is going to propose later on today and all these other things, right? So if WordPress, we don't do this, we're basically just scrapping... We're basically strapping another piano on top of the existing one we're towing right now, right? So we're not getting anywhere.
So basically 4.9 whatever would just be a long-term service release.
Yeah.
Just maintain it for a certain amount of time, you know, 2 years, 3 years, whatever.
Yeah.
So this kind of dovetails a little bit, segues. I want to read this comment. I'm great at reading comments on the show, I found out. But I want to read this comment because I think it expresses a mindset I've seen by commenters on the Tavern and on other places discussing Gutenberg. And I'll start off with, it was a Gutenberg article published on a website, and it starts off with, the final user does not have to learn about all these concepts, short codes, widgets, menus, TinyMCE, meta boxes, to understand how to create and edit content in WordPress. It might seem natural to someone already familiar with WordPress. That was from the article. Now, in response to that, someone wrote, and that's what greater than 29% of all existing websites already are, familiar and happy with the existing WordPress concepts. These millions of users don't want a new editor which forces them to do or learn unfamiliar things and will cost them time, money, and happiness. And that's why Gutenberg in core is a bad idea. It is a breaking concept, so it should come as a plugin, maybe even pre-installed at hosting companies like WordPress.com, which seem to forget what their success is based on. And there are quite a few people who have this mindset, and there's of just writing off Gutenberg, like even just the concept of it is bad. No, everything is just fine, hunky-dory, the way it is. Why are we even bothering?
Yeah, they should make a fork. We should make that fork for them, and they should go on the gracious pastures of 4.9.x and never get new features. Like, the first part of that comment is valid, that there are a ton of people who rely on WordPress that will have to relearn. And that's what we've been talking about so far. The second part of it, that Gutenberg should remain a plugin, doesn't make any sense to what Gutenberg is. And that's why I did my talk at WordCamp US. And that's why I keep talking about this all the time. We're not talking about adding some extra feature to WordPress. We're talking about re-engineering how WordPress works at core. So, and the reason why this is important is the current modalities of how we access content on the web are changing rapidly. So unless WordPress progresses into the new space of basically what blocks are, this idea of having individual little components of content that can be accessed in whatever way the user wants, if we don't do that in WordPress, then WordPress will just be left behind by other platforms that are better. The REST API kind of opened the door for this. The blocks, if they are implemented in a better way than they are right now, for instance, with the proposal JJJ will post later today, then everything, then we'll be able to do things like, say, write an application that can go into any WordPress site and consume just small pieces of content to say, like, I only want the post content without any images, and I can just eliminate images, or I only want the images from this particular post, or I want any image that's associated to any post that says a certain thing, or I only want like the lead from each post, but I only want posts. Like, you have access to all these little components without running queries on the entire post object all the time, right? That's the ideal we're going for.
Which is why you say Gutenberg lends itself very well to the idea of headless CMS.
Yes. It lends itself to headless CMS, and it also lends itself to the next methodologies, the next tools and methods we'll use to access web content. I'm sure you do this already. Like, you listen to web content through some form of text-to-speech system, right? Like, there's times when you like use either Pocket or something else to basically, you go to a website, there's like one gazillion ads, everything is cluttered like hell. You just say, tag to Pocket, strip out the actual content, and then play it back using a text-to-speech service. That's what I do now because I have dyslexia and it takes me forever to read things. I just have Pocket read it back to me, right? Mm-hmm. I also link Pocket to my e-reader. So at night, I can read articles from the web on my e-reader, and they're presented to me with the font I want in the styling I want, and I specifically turn off images. So I only get the text version, right? Gutenberg, in its... the idea of Gutenberg allows us to take that concept and expand it even further, right? And allows WordPress to start rethinking how it handles content and how it allows people to access that content. And the reason why I kept bringing up VR in my talk, which sounds completely insane, and people listen to it and they go, VR? Wow, you really took it far into crazy town, right? But the reality is VR, as it's being developed now, is being developed on web platform, right? So the virtual reality of the future will actually be built using web technologies. And the expectation of a person using any kind of VR, so under VR we have MR, XR, CR, AR, blah, 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 blah. Like, under the umbrella of some sort of augmented, modified virtual reality type thing, people will want to be able to go into a site and say, give me just a site title, the first three posts, and I only want the lead of each and the title and maybe an image. And then they can even probably assign each of these components to different avatars or whatever, or have someone read, like, who knows what that's going to be like. But we need to prepare for people to be able to do anything they want, right? Mm-hmm. We don't need to know what they want to do. We only need to know that they want to be able to gain access to individualized pieces of content and sort and parse that in whatever method they want. And that's what Gutenberg needs to do. What they're currently doing by parsing everything into HTML comments actually stands in the way of that, right? Mm-hmm. What we want is basically to dump out clean data so that we don't end up with Storify and dump out HTML that then has to be reparsed.
Right. Well, the HTML comments reminds me of like Microsoft Word, like the XML that you end up pasting around from document to document. And when you actually accidentally get some source, some broken Microsoft Word bits out of it, it ruins the entire document.
Oh, I'll take your analogy a step further. The HTML comments as they are now is actually the reason why Dreamweaver and FrontPage failed. Because Dreamweaver and FrontPage were doing this exact thing. They were using this, what are they called? Dynamic Web Templates, DWTs, that literally used comments within the HTML to say, like, this area of the page is editable and this page area is not. So you could go in and just edit those components. This is almost identical to what the DWTs did. And DWTs were abandoned, what, 8 years ago? Because it didn't work properly. So so there's precedence for this, and the precedence is do not do this, right? Which is why it's so important that smart people who understand database structures need to file a ticket that explains exactly how this should be done in such a way that people don't disregard it because Crazy Town is out talking about VR again, right?
No, the VR part of it is the most fascinating because it's honestly, it is the complete opposite of where most of us that work with WordPress spend our lives unless we're enjoying a video game or some other thing. And so like my half college degree is in 3D modeling and video game design, and I haven't done it in 13 years with any serious level of accomplishing anything. And so the idea of having everything come out of WordPress that is not just like semantically correct again, but also like parsable in a sane and digestible and reusable way, is kind of exactly what democratizing publishing to the web is supposed to be all about. So when I saw the original data structure, I figured like it was like two things. My response was like twofold. It was like, well, that's clever. I guess that's a way that can get done, but they don't, this is just where they are with it now. This will change. This has to be like a shim for now to like make Gutenberg work the way they need to and everything else. And so I'm a little surprised that we are this far into Gutenberg's development and that conversation hasn't seriously been started by someone other than me yet. Cause I don't feel like I'm the person to start that conversation, but like
you are. That's my entire, if you watch like second half of my entire talk is just every single person who has opinions on this needs to provide those opinions and actually take part in this conversation because this is open source. Open source is built by the people who show up and contribute. We all need to contribute, right? And I actually want every single person who's listening to this podcast to actually go test Gutenberg, write something about it. Go on Twitter, go on Facebook, go on MySpace, or God knows where you are. Write a comment, write a blog post, write anything you want, and just voice your opinion about where you want it to go, and go file tickets and actually say, hey, I wanted to do this thing, or I don't think it can do it, or why is it doing this thing? It should be doing it this other way. Every single one of those into the system so that we can have a good constructive conversation about how we want this to move forward. And as for the data structure debate has actually been going since day one. It's just been suppressed. And the reason why it's suppressed is because it has to be out of time, right? So every time someone says we need to change the data structure, the response is automatically no backwards compatibility, end of conversation, right? Mm-hmm. The reason why I'm proposing this radical idea of forking WordPress or basically stopping development at 4.9 is specifically to get rid of have a proper conversation about it. Because if we say, look, we'll give people an off-ramp and just plant them at that level where they don't have to worry about this, and then we can future develop. That gives us the room in the conversation to actually have a serious conversation about what those data structures might look like so that we compatibility. And that's why I'm saying you need to file the ticket because a lot of people want to do this. There have been several blog posts written about some version of this, but it's been shut down every time. I don't think it'll be shut down this time because people are starting to think maybe we can actually do something else. And a lot of people are just thinking, how can we do this without Morton wants to do it, which is forking WordPress, right? But at least the conversation is happening. So please do input. And if any of you other people listening to this have ideas about data structures in WordPress and how they should look and architecturing data for WordPress, please submit those things as tickets or write blog posts, or better yet, write a blog post and submit a ticket.
Well, as a wise man once told me, John, it's not what you see is what you get. It's what you contribute is what you get. Okay. Watch the video. Anyways, you can tell that Morton's time is up because the internet demons are starting to get him. You dropped out a little bit there, but we didn't even get to, I feel like we've only scratched the surface, man. And there's so much, we didn't even talk about the state of the word, really some of the stuff that's in it, but there's always another Wednesday in the near future. So we'll have to get you back on and talk a little bit more in depth about this. Now, one of the things that somebody wanted us to ask you is, you know, we talk about the possibilities and the hype and the great things into what Gutenberg can enable, but there's some people who wanted to know from your perspective, what are some of the highest risks? What are some of the biggest risks involved with Gutenberg? And maybe you can name them off pretty quickly and we'll let you get out of here.
I think what we've talked about, community is probably the biggest risk. And it's one of those things where I don't think there's any way we can avoid some sort of fracturing in the community because of this. Just because historically that's what happens. Every time some major change happens, there's a group of people who will try to get out in some way, either by forking, by running away, by like forcing downgrades or whatever, right? And that's why I'm saying if we, as a community, provide a method for that and gracefully fork everything and make it clean, then we'll allow people to allow us a community without it breaking apart. The other major concern I have is the data structure. I really don't like how it's being done right now. I also think it's a blocker for future development. I'm not exactly sure how to fix it, other than I think I'm trying to formulate this into an article or a drawing or something, but I think there's something around this idea that everything inside the post element is a block, which doesn't make any sense. I think the post itself should be a block, and then anything that might be repeated elsewhere should be a block. But the other blocks that you see in the editor should actually just be UI blocks that appear in the editor and nowhere else. It's very complicated to explain. It makes sense inside here right now, but it doesn't really make much sense when I say it. The other major risk that comes with Gutenberg is simply that a change like this, unless it's communicated well to the end users of WordPress, all the people who don't listen to this podcast, don't go to WordCamp, don't read the Tavern or do anything else, but just use WordPress.
The people who update WordPress and, oh my God, everything's different.
Those people need to get enough information to feel comfortable with how this works. And WordPress has not done this before. So we need to actually develop a new method for communicating with the end users about how WordPress is evolving. I think that looks like, in part, surfacing a video inside the before the update happens, like run some 4.9.8 or whatever, and then actually have a video at the top of the dashboard that says, hello, WordPress is about to change. Here's what you need to know. And then have a walkthrough of how these things work that includes some sort of website that has FAQs and has a dedicated team to answer questions and all that kind of stuff, and has information for users and designers and developers separately so that those three groups are handled. In addition to that, we need to surface the plugin once it's ready for core merge. The plugin should be surfaced to every single WordPress site in the world with a recommendation to test it. And I would take it a step further and say, there has to be a way of running the Gutenberg test version in WordPress in a live site without that impacting the way the site itself works. So people are able to test it in their environment and create and edit content that doesn't go live so they can see how it impacts their own experience. And then they can then provide feedback back to the project to say, hey, I tried it. This crazy thing happens. What the hell is going on here? And then someone can say, well, you need to update the plugin, or, oh, we didn't think of that, or actually that's not a problem. You're just clicking the wrong button 18 times, right? But to provide ample feedback or provide ample training materials for people in advance of this rollout so that when it happens, people are ready. Because the worst thing that can happen is we inside the community are all like, woohoo, Gutenberg is finally ready. It's awesome. Everything is great. And then we ship it to the world and the world goes, what the hell is this? And then they start the conversation that we've been having for a year, except they started after the development is finished. And that's just a PR question. Like, this is literally just us doing our due diligence and taking our duty of care seriously and actually informing the end user about what we're doing before we do it.
Oh, man. Isn't it easier to ask for forgiveness, though, instead of asking? I don't know.
Not in this case. This is way too big because people's business, like people's livelihoods depend on WordPress.
I get it, but if we ask the world for feedback, we will get 7 billion answers.
You won't. Maybe 1% will answer. And even then, you can easily triage that by having a proper FAQ and all that kind of stuff. So I know you're being facetious. I just don't have time for it.
John, you're worrying too much. All right, Morten, thank you so much, man, for coming on the show and talking about your presentation in Gutenberg and your experience at WordCamp US.
That was awesome.
Congratulations on being named honorary team member of the Gutenberg team by Matt. How did that make you feel? Did you
blush? I'm waiting for my letter jacket or whatever it is the team members get.
All right. And
well, to be fair, I'm actually going to join the Gutenberg team, or kind of have already, to help them with some CSS grid stuff. So maybe awesome. I'll actually get a contributor tag at some point.
That's awesome. I mean, that's great.
I want to contribute something meaningful into the WordPress community. So.
Awesome. So we'll have links to your presentations and so forth after the show. And we're going to have you on again, because this is just, we have so many great conversations about the future of WordPress. And we didn't even talk about CSS Grid and its impacts on how that ties into Gutenberg. And I still want to talk to you about telemetry. So
we're going to have Matt on for episode 300. We should have Morten back for 301.
That's a good idea. So, Morten,
let's tentatively put that in pencil in some calendar somewhere and see what happens.
How can people get in touch with you and follow your progress on the web?
I am Morten on Twitter. That's M-O-R-1-0, because that's my name, Morten. My website is also Morten, M-O-R-1-0, because that's my name, Morten.com. You can find me on LinkedIn. I am Morten Rand Hendrickson on LinkedIn. Where I post that I'm currently posting a series of articles about Gutenberg and things like that. And if you want to watch my courses, I am at LinkedIn Learning. So go to your LinkedIn profile, top left-hand corner, button that says Learning, click on it, and then you can go watch our courses.
And before we let you go, Morten, I just want to say thank you for your contributions, for raising these discussions, and for doing so in a very meaningful way where there is critique and there's criticism, but there are also, you know, proposed solutions and what have you. Please continue to do so. You're a great member of the WordPress community.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate the opportunity to get to be on your esteemed podcast.
Esteemed. All right, man. Thanks a lot. Enjoy. Have a great rest of the day, man.
You too.
See you, Morten.
All right. See ya. That was Morten Rand Hendrickson, man. One of my favorite guests on the show. Wow. I was hyped up. Once I found out he was going to be on the show, I was hyped up for this discussion, and I was not disappointed. Were you, John?
I remember when I was one of your favorites. On you.
Hey, still here.
Yeah.
Okay, bye, Morten. I remember when I used to be one of your favorite guests, and so now I'm only just a wee bit jealous. Yeah, Morten is...
You end up being a coach.
Yeah, I guess. You know, that's what Morten has to look forward to. I am his future.
So, man, we've already gotten an hour into the show. If it's okay with you, John, I'd like to quickly maybe discuss or highlight a couple of the announcements that were made in the State of the Word.
Oh, sure. Yeah, let's go. Let's do it.
So the WordPress Foundation made a huge announcement. Last year, they announced that they were going to donate to three organizations. And I believe, what were they? They were the Internet Archive. Was it Hack the Code?
I don't remember. I know them. There's Girls Who Code or Girl.
I should know this.
I'm looking it up now because I feel terrible for not remember. Girls Who.
Okay, here it is. Hack the Hood, the Internet Archive, and Black Girls Code. The foundation actually donated $15,000 to each organization, which was more than the original goal. And on top of that, the WordPress Foundation has opened up donations. Now, anybody can actually donate money now to the WordPress Foundation, which should enable the foundation to increase its amount of funding, opening it up to the general public. And I've noticed that some people have already donated to the WordPress Foundation. It's on my list of things to do, so it's going to be cool. And I can't wait to see how much money and influence the WordPress Foundation has on other great initiatives like the ones they're already supporting, and how they how effective it could be by donating money to those.
Well, it's a long time coming, right? Like the conversations about accepting donations and what to do with some of the money and being more transparent about where the money's going and what it's doing and what it's going towards have been happening for years. So to finally have a lot of this stuff being implemented, having it be the proper 501, having it have the right board of directors, having all these things is like incremental steps that, you know, take a lot of legal time and things to sort out. And WordPress is unique in what it is and trying to do and be. So a lot of this is just, I'm assuming, is a lot of education and learning as they go. So slow. I mean, my recent foyer into government reminds me all the time at how slow the legal side of these things can be. So it's cool that it's finally happening.
Based on some statistics that Matt shared, since adding the meetups, WordPress news widget, meetup attendance is up more than 30%, which is awesome. That's the entire idea behind that widget. And Matt actually said that they have other plans in the works for that widget. He also provided an update on HackerOne, which they joined back in May, and that seems to have done well. There's been 52 bugs resolved with 46 hackers thanked and 39 reports rewarded.
And 52 doesn't sound like a lot, but each one of those bugs is like days or weeks in planning and releasing and shipping and stuff. Some one for sure was months. So 52 in, I guess, kind of a year, less than a year, is significant.
Now, there's this project that XWP was working on called Tide. And Matt spent a little bit of time talking about the Tide project, which was actually kind of been adopted by the WordPress project. And what Tide does is it runs automated tests against every plugin and theme in the WordPress directory. Now, you and I have hinted at this idea before. Mm-hmm. In fact, you kind of talked about it with, was it GitHub or GitLab that did the automatic sort of JavaScript or security testing on the code repositories?
Drupal does it. Drupal's done it for a long time. Okay. If you have your own GitLab, you can start running tests across repos and everything, which is what I've been trying to do with most of my plugins. But doing it across all of the plugins in the plugins repo is like, it starts off as like a hugely monumental sounding thing. But that's sort of Moore's law of computing. These things start big and then they just are running and then they're steady as they go, and then it's like it has always been that way. So it's Tide is a cool project. I had a similar conversation with Mark Jaquith like years ago about like an idea of mine that I never did anything with to scan the plugin repository for metadata and option registrations, because you have a little function that you can register metadata or register your options, like your settings option. And then identify plugin incompatibilities based on the options that are registered, and then look at have WordPress sort of underneath the hood when you activate a plugin like phone home to api.wordpress.org, look for known incompatibilities. Like you have one event calendar plugin, and now your plugin installed, and you've installed a second event calendar plugin. They both use register post type event. They both can't do that thing. And so to like identify and scan the plugins repo for these like known incompatibilities, and then warn users ahead of time that they have installed a plugin that has a problem with a different plugin they have installed. Tide is like the opposite of that, where it's literally testing the code, not testing how the code is executed inside of WordPress with each other necessarily. So there might be a long tail way to take my 5 year ago thought and use Tide to try and extend something off of it. So I'm really excited to go play with Tide.
And what Tide does, I mean, it's you know, namespaces, I think security vulnerabilities, possible injection vulnerabilities. It sort of does all that stuff, and it kind of gives you scores and stuff like that. So right now, a lot of this stuff, it's open source now. It's on GitHub, and people can provide. Developers are really highly encouraged to provide feedback on the test and what it's reporting, and how these numbers and stuff should actually be displayed, and what should be discerned from those numbers, and the impacts those have. And at some point, maybe later on in 2018, we're going to start seeing possibly those numbers or the results of the scans on the plugin directory page for every plugin. You know, maybe there'll be an advanced tab where you look at the test results and you'll be able to see it without having to actually run the plugin itself, and give users and other developers a better idea as to what to expect or what's under the hood for a particular plugin. And this could be one of the first major steps to help change the mindset or the perception that the WordPress plugin repository is just a giant garbage bin of crap code.
May change it, or it may confirm it. Right. I mean, you don't know. And step one is running tests down each individual plugin, treating each plugin as a unit. Step two is exposing those results on the plugin repository. Step three is what I am the most excited about, which is integration testing between multiple plugins at a time. So it's fine if BuddyPress's tests pass, and it's fine if BBPress's tests pass, but when both of those plugins are ran together and they are supposed to integrate, if they break together, we need to be able to identify the intersection of all these plugins and where breakage occurs. And so it starts off small, even though it's big. It starts off with just testing individual plugins. There's 50,000 of them. But being able to do 50,000 times 50,000 and combine them all and see which ones conflict with others is when users really, really start to like feel the effects of like the winning that happens when they know for a fact that these plugins are going to not collide with one another. It's cool. It's really
sounds cool. Like a pretty cool feature. So the WordPress Growth Council, Matt admitted that things on that front have been slow, but he announced during the State of the Word that the following week there was going to be a meeting and a group set up, and things were going to start moving on that front throughout 2018. And he said there's going to be two different councils, one for enterprise and one for consumer. So two different sort of audiences will be impacted and targeted throughout 2018. Weston Reuter, Mel Choice, came on stage during the State of the Word. They highlighted some of the work they've been doing in WordPress 4.8 and 4.9. Very cool stuff. Also, congrats to Jeff Paul. He helped out with leading those releases. WordPress REST API, Matt, again, harped on the fact that things have been slow on the REST API front, and there could be quite a bit of improvement in that area. In fact, Ryan McHugh published a post called State of the REST API that is definitely worth reading, as he highlights the highs and lows of the project since December 2016 and some of the challenges it has going forward. And of course, there is a lot of emphasis on Gutenberg. And as it turns out, Gutenberg has had more than 4,000 commits to it from 100 plus contributors. So there are a lot of people contributing to the future of WordPress here. There's been about 18 major iterations. Of course, Matt highlighted the fact that there will be a classic editor people can use if they don't want to check out or use Gutenberg right away. And other core updates as well. He highlighted that WP CLI is an official WordPress project. It's had four major releases with 124 different contributors this year. There will be no default theme this year. Of course, I think that's kind of a given. However, Matt did say going forward, one of the three core focuses for 2018 was a Gutenberg theme. So probably around the end of 2018, now, I imagine the default theme will be called 2019 or something like it. And I believe it will probably heavily use Gutenberg and show off what's capable. It will probably have templates and whatever else. I'm very much looking forward to that theme. And, of course, Gutenberg editing, Gutenberg customization, those are the other two core focuses. And Matt said he's going to keep the project lead hat on for another year because he wants to see the Gutenberg project through.
Spaceballs the breakfast cereal. Spaceballs the flamethrower. Gutenberg the site editor.
Well, you know, I was reading this and I made the joke. I said, you know what this reminds me of? You know, Matt Mulloway should just came on stage and said, you know, I've got a fever, and the only prescription is more Gutenberg. No, that would have explained the focuses for 2018.
I really thought there was a missed opportunity to take the Gutenberg editor, the customizer, and the theme, and have them be etc for etc. There could have been a hidden lineup there of etc. If it was editor theme customizer and not editor customizer theme, it would have been pretty clever.
I mean, this is the way you think. I never would have thought of that, but on stage, you know, there's this giant boot next to Matt, and everybody thought, hey, that's going to come out of the boot, but it didn't really work out that way. So before we wrap it up here and we get to our picks of the week, I wanted to talk a little bit about this. I got to talk to somebody about this, but during the introduction, before the State of the Word actually happened, mm-hmm. there was a poem that was recited by Amanda Giles called "Code mm-hmm. is Poetry," and it was mm-hmm. it was a wonderful poem. It was actually geeky. It was related to WordPress. However, in that poem, the word that rhymes with "mother trucker" was dropped in the crowd, and I could tell you, a lot of people were shocked to hear that dropped in front of 2,000 people. And I have to imagine, and I don't have any confirmation of this, but I have to imagine that her poem was read. It was approved. Mm-hmm. Somebody higher up approved the reading of this poem. In mm-hmm. fact, I went to the State of the Word recording, and when it gets to that part, it's actually censored. So you can't hear her actually say it.
Wow.
And there was some fallout from this. There were I know for a fact that there were children in the audience at WordCamp US listening to the State of the Word, and who knows who was watching the live stream. Now, the code of conduct doesn't really specifically say anything about dropping these kind of words at the event, but all of these articles, you know, we talk about being inclusive. We talk about WordCamps. I mean, even this event, like the State of the Word, being, you know, open. These events being open to everyone at all ages, and we have kid camps now. We're actually encouraging children and trying to get youth to WordCamps. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, this was the first, and I believe this is the last that we'll have a word like that dropped. So on that type of stage,
you might be right. So I saw Amanda at Contributor Day as we were closing up our laptops and getting ready to go, and we had kind of been like talking about how, I mean, my personal opinion is that it doesn't really matter. That it's cool that it was in there. But so I asked, and she said, yeah, Matt read it. And he said, it's poetry and you should read it as it is. And so I think that for me was an answer enough to the question of was there anything around or behind it? And it sounds like no, there wasn't, because it's art. That is the art as it was written and proposed and submitted, and it deserves to be read the way that it was intended to be read. So I think that's the spirit of all of it. I'm a little surprised, I guess maybe not, a little surprised that it was censored on the live stream or on the WordPress.tv, I'm assuming it ended up there too. So that's,
yeah, I went there and I watched the video, and I specifically went to that part, and it's just a blink.
It depends on, I mean, it could be it's generational. It could be how you were raised, where you grew up. All those things matter, depending on what everyone is offended by everything and nobody is offended by nothing. Like it doesn't, but it didn't bother me, but it was hard for me to not applaud. Cause it felt very free. It felt very nice that she said it like with the chutzpah that it deserved to be said with. And in that moment, in the audience, I instantly went through all of the same thought process that you just described. Was like, oh, she did say it. I wonder if she should have. I'm guessing it must have been fine because she did. That's amazing, and I'm happy that it happened that way. And so you could hear the collective like gasps in the crowd a little bit of like, did that just happen? That did just, but it's part of the culture of our community. And I'm happy that she wasn't asked. I think censoring it or her censoring it or being asked to censor it would have been brought the wrong decision. It would have changed the dynamic and the meaning and the open and freeness of it in a bad way. And saying it was the right thing.
Okay. Well, I don't really have too much of an argument with that. I mean, if it's explained to me that it's poetry and that he read it and he was okay with it and to read it as is, that makes sense to me. It was just a shocking moment to hear that word on that stage in that moment. Yeah.
In real life, when you're not doing a podcast and when you're not being a journalist.
Well, don't ask me what words I say.
No, I'm just saying that the level of candor that we have when the mic is off and no one is recording is different than when it's on. And so in real life, the people that know me know that I speak freely and swear words don't bother me and all those things. And so and I grew up watching George Carlin, Johnny Carson, Benny Hill, David Letterman, late night TV. Like those, that was what I enjoyed when I was a kid. And so me personally, it doesn't bother me, but I also make the choice, like when I'm in public or when I'm giving a talk or when I'm on this show, like those, I don't think that the audience listening is tuning in to hear that kind of language. And so I turn that off, right? Like that's, I think the level of entertainment or professionalism or whatever it is that we want to deliver. So if you let something slip, or if you have a moment of a little moment of a weakness or saying a word where it maybe doesn't need to fit, I think doing that occasionally is like watching a comedian breaking character. It's watching somebody on Saturday Night Live laugh. It like you laugh with them. It's you feel in like it's intimate and you're there with them having a private moment more than it is someone having their game face on all the time. So I appreciate it.
I can tell you by experience that this show, WordPress Weekly, has recently largely been curse word free, with the occasional slips by mostly by the guest, actually. And there is a few times in the past where we kind of let loose freely and just said things the way as we would say off air. And I received emails often from people saying, look, I listened to your show on the speakers, no headphones, and I cannot have those words being said on the show. And I said, oh, okay, you know, I'm sorry about that. So, but yeah, I mean, I think you make a lot of good points there. What do you say we get into our picks of the week and wrap this puppy up?
Sure.
All right. So my pick of the week is actually almost nothing to do with WordPress, but actually has something to do with WordPress. It's actually called CopyTrans, and it is a plugin for Windows that allows you to view HEIC formatted files. You can get this at copytrans.net. And in iOS 11, I found out the hard way that Apple has started using HEIC and HEIF, which stands for High Efficiency Image Format. And what it does is it's a more streamlined way of storing image files. It allows digital photographs to be created in smaller file sizes while retaining higher image quality than its JPEG alternatives. The problem here is that the image format is currently not supported in Windows 7, 8, and 10. And it's not supported in practically everywhere else right now, including WordPress. If you try and upload an HEIC or HEIF file to WordPress, it'll say this file has incorrect permissions to upload or something to that effect. So what this does is it's just a simple plugin for Windows, available on all versions of Windows. It allows you to see it in the Windows Picture Viewer, so you can see images just as if they were JPEGs. It allows you to print them as if they were JPEGs. It just adds support for viewing, browsing, and editing the HEIC, HEIF files on Windows. Of course, you can mess around with them on a Mac. There's also converters out there, both online and offline, you can use. There's also an option inside iOS 11 on the iPhone where you can change it to export as JPEGs, I believe. So there's that. There's also a core track ticket on WordPress where somebody has already brought this up on supporting the ability to upload files in HEIF and HE or VC or HEIC formats. However, because of the lack of support kind of across the web, it's not really a high priority. Yeah. And who knows when it will be. So if you have an iPhone, and sometimes I like to just drag files, image files right off my iPhone onto a hard drive or my Windows PC, I'm like, what is this HEIC stuff? I try to open it, and that's how I found out the hard way that they, in iOS 11, they made this switch. So I'll have a link to this plugin if you use Windows and you want to check out those HEIC image files. You know, I'll take care of you. And I'm also going to do a write-up on WP Tavern on this issue and some workarounds for some people.
I'm a little surprised that, like, it's 2018 and computers have been around for a while now and that we still have these, like, file format problems. Like, we're still kind of going through and choosing to reinvent how all that stuff
works. Well, it's Apple's fault. They introduced it.
Right. And it, but it's like, like we have RAW format for photos, and that's finally getting a lot of widespread adoption. But I don't know that I would want, like, I wouldn't serve the RAW image. It's not good for anybody unless someone actually wanted the source of my RAW file. So it's the same thing with these new, like, Apple's new file formats. Is there... They're nice that they are efficient and that they are lossless and all those things, but I would think that it would just be easier to boil them down to the JPEGs that we are used to moving around than trying to support yet another new image file format that's just like 1% better than or 30% or whatever the HEICs are. But it's just surprising to me that this is still a problem. I figured we'd be like way past this by now. Maybe not.
Well, we're not. And there will be more
There will
file format wars in the future, or adoptions, I should say. So just a heads up there. What is your pick of the week? So I understand it's pretty cool, and it was a gift. It was gifted to you.
It was gifted to me from you, actually.
I'm not taking credit. Okay, thank you.
I'm giving you credit. But it was I had seen this come across Twitter, so it made sense when you had recommended that we talk about this, because it's sort of worth giving a deeper dive into. So the folks at 10UP, specifically, it looks like kind of largely led by Taylor Lovett, wrote not exactly a plugin, but more of a tool for WordPress called WP Snapshots. And so the quick sort of description of it is that it is a command line tool for exporting an entire WordPress site. Namely the guts of it, the database and the WP content directory, and packaging it up and putting it into Amazon Web Services. So specifically putting the database tables in Amazon S3 and putting the actual metadata and all the bits in Amazon DynamoDB. So the thing about it that I would use it for, and I haven't needed to, but that I can imagine being really useful, is demo sites where you want to give someone the option to remotely pull down a sort of pre-configured snapshot of the way that a WordPress site would look with, you know, all of the switches turned on and off, or all of the posts set up and pages set up. And even for like plugins and themes that may have their own demo data, to have it all stored in a place where it can be every hour just like pulled back down and wiped clean. So regardless of however many demo accounts get set up or who defaces the site, it can periodically just pull down that snapshot from anywhere at any point. You could do really cool stuff with this, like a lot of what the, I mean, I guess I don't know how it works anymore, but some VaultPress type stuff, like build a backup solution with this. Let's take your snapshot every hour, every time you change a post, let's trigger a complete backup of all of the database and all of your files up to Amazon. And so on literally any type of action that happens, you could roll back the entire site back to a very specific snapshot. It's kind of like a time machine for WordPress, but it's like the guts. It's the core command line version of that utility. So
maybe a command line interface version of VersionPress, maybe.
Kind of, right. I mean, it's pretty slick.
The idea, at least.
Yep. So that's my pick of the week. Good job, guys. It's a cool tool.
Yes, exactly. So that's going to do it for this episode of WordPress Weekly. Next Wednesday, we're going to have Heather Burns on Web Dev Law. And it's going to be all things privacy on the web. We're going to talk about GDPR and how that's going to affect WordPress Automatic, how it's already impacting some folks. And just talk about general web privacy as it stands today, because it's a pretty important topic. And we seem to be losing privacy everywhere you look. So that's going to be a great show. And then after that, and then John will wish me happy birthday. I'm reminding you, John.
I will. I would never forget ever your birthday.
And then
I don't know when it is, but once I remember when it is, I'll never.
It's next Thursday. Anyway, anywho, so that's what we have. Looking forward to next week's show. It's going to be a blast. Please, if you enjoy the show, if you don't like this show, please leave us a review on iTunes.
That could be your birthday gift.
Yes.
Everyone listening, for Jeff's birthday, should go out to iTunes and give Jeff the gift of a review, preferably a good one.
Well, yeah, sure. Preferably good. But, I mean, just tell me what you really think of the show. Not of me, but of the show. That would be awesome. So that's going to do it for this episode of WordPress Weekly. You can find show notes for this episode and all other episodes on wptavern.com. And you can follow me on Twitter, all 280 characters of me.
And multiple tweets now. It's a tweet. You have your own tweet storm now. Did you see that?
Yeah, the threaded tweet storm.
Whoop-dee-dee. There you go.
Yeah, great. eat your heart out, Andreessen. You know, it's all Mark's fault.
I call them Gutwitberg blocks.
Okay, you need to stop it with this whole Gut and everything. Yeah, you follow me on Twitter at JefferJFFR0. How about you, John?
At JJJ or JJJ.blog.
Excellent. So until next week, everybody, enjoy the rest of your week. Stay safe out there. Thanks for everybody who stay tuned. We had like 10 or 11 viewers this entire show. I love you guys and girls.
Awesome.
Keep being awesome. Keep doing WordPress stuff, and we'll talk to you again next Wednesday afternoon. Say bye, John.
Bye, John.